two introductions. First of all, when Yossi walked in, he sat over there. I told him he should sit over here because I'd rather you talk rather than just listen. You sit over there, it's like I'll think, fancy lecture, and you're going to listen. And if you sit over here, then you'll choose. I'd rather that. The second is, I intend to give out as we go along, including today, different things, some of which, or many of which, will come from documents written in a previous life. And our understanding with the OU is that even though they've given me copies, personal copies of documents, I have no permission to give those documents out unless I have specifically asked permission. So if I give you something, because I've asked permission from them beforehand to give it out.
Therefore, we shouldn't be fine
with it. Well, it's not meant to be publicized over the whole world, but yet it was given with, we asked permission, and we are able to give it out, but it's not meant for plastering over the world.
Okay, yeah.
And what we're going to do is just, the Derech Klal, you're not going to give out things until the end, just to not distract you, so you can pay attention instead of reading. Okay. The first thing, which we'll cover as much as we can of it, really is not directly related to Hagol's Kehl and Tafel Nauf. Kederish Shacheris. Kederish Shacheris are made out of Cheris, Shenishtamish Shem Chometz Kol HaShana, that use Chometz in it the whole year. A few Oysen Shoysen Hem Daisa, Umini Kamacham, even those that you cooked in them, Daisa, Umini Kamacham, all kinds of porridges and things with a lot of Chometz to it, to which the point is that tremendous amount of pli in the kli, meshach shvun etiv. All you have to do is you clean them off well. But initially, a chametz nikuban to make sure there's no chametz left on top of them, no obvious chametz on them. Umutal hashoysim l'achar pesach l'shtamish b'hem bein b'mina bein shlam b'mina. And then you could keep them till after Pesach and use them after Pesach b'mina or shlam b'mina. Where does this thing come from? There's a machlokes from the Gemara as to whether there's Bal Yirah and whether there's Chomet Shavu the Pesach on a Bliya that's in the Kli. So this thing is telling us that we paskin that Bal Yirah is only for things that you can see, only things that are tangible and that are on the outside of a Kli. So as long as you get rid of the Be'en on the outside of the Kli, you don't have to get rid of the Bliyas. There's no Bal Yirah on them, and there's no Chomet Shavu the Pesach on those Bliyas that are in the rest of the point of this thing.
If you have nothing
to design,
it should be alright.
That's a separate question. That's really Hilchos Pesach, not Hagol's Kehl. The Rama says that the Rama in Tafnim Zayin, Mishmur brings that the Rama says in Tafnim Zayin that this din is not only if it went before Pesach, it's even if it went in on Pesach. I mean, even though the Chometz was, you were already over on Bal Yirah for that Chometz, again, once it's Balua, there's no concern. And the last thing is that if you, the Mishmur brings them also, that if you had forgot to clean the kli, you're supposed to clean it before Pesach. If you forgot to clean the kli before Pesach, and you realize on Pesach that there's a dirty chalom pot in the bottom of your cabinet, then you're supposed to clean it out even on Pesach. You're supposed to clean it on Pesach like you do regular beer chametz. You have chametz on time to clean, and you could have to get rid of it like any other chametz. Okay. Next. Now what's the next part of them? Umatzniyim b'Pesach, b'makom tzenua, and you put them away on Pesach in a private place, she'ein rogel le'lachshom, in a place where you wouldn't usually go to, potentially yovel le'shamashom b'Pesach, so you won't end up by mistake using them on Pesach, v'toyv le'sogrom b'cheder u'hatzim apech, and it's good to lock them up or close them up in a room and to hide the key. And the Bach says that this comes from the Gemara says that if a guy has his chametz in your house, you're supposed to put a mechitza of 10 tefachim in front of it. So as an outgrowth of that din, this is not a Gemara, but this is an outgrowth of that din is you should also put it up into a thing and lock it up, or we tape it up or something like that. Okay. There's some side childs, Pesach childs, just mentioned. One of the childs in my home is, can you put up a kli that was not kasher? This is a kli that was not kasher. Can you take a kli that was not kasher and put it where it's out of reach? When there's no way that you're going to possibly use it. You put it on the top of your brake fund when no one's going to possibly reach it. That's one child. According to what's the shell?
Yeah,
to use it, to take chametz to the kli, put it on top of your, it says here you're supposed to lock it up that you won't be able to use it. So shell, can you put it just out of reach, but it's still there, it's still accessible?
The whole
din is just a type. The whole din is not a chiv. That's one machlokes in the corner. And one is the opposite machlokes. What else? If you want to take your Pesach dishes and put them on display year round. Okay, that's the opposite. Could you put you have a kara? Mm-hmm. Okay, it's a big fancy kara. Can you put that up someplace just because you like the way it looks? Can you put that up? Well, maybe a kara nobody would use it in here. But something else that you might by mistake use.
So what is that all? the shawl last night, yesterday.
Was he allowed to put on paper?
She has her friends in China, her visit China.
So I don't remember. I think the Mishnah Berurah is better not to.
It's a real show.
It's Machlokes Machorim.
This is like a day of the day, you know? I mean, maybe I'm going to use it for Chametz, then I'll forget again and use it for Pesach.
So that's the task to the maker, because it says I'd have to do two things wrong. I have to first of all forget it on during the year, and then forget about back on Pesach. It's a Bachan task I can look at it. It wasn't a game, so I left it on the
right.
Okay, and then one more thing, well, before we get to the Hagol scaling part of this, is that the Mishnah Berurah at the end of Tos Nun.
Are these notes new?
This is my own note. I don't know if
you have beforehand?
No, this is new. And the Mishnah Berurah at the end of Tav Nun says that if you have a kli that you use for chametz, but you never use it for food, for example, you use, make shampoo, you wash your dishes or wash your clothes in this bowl and use it for chametz, so that kli, even though it has blizz of chametz, you're allowed to keep that kli around because there's no concern anybody would use it for food. If you use it for both, use it to wash your clothes and to cook up food, then you wouldn't be allowed to keep it around.
You mean you're washing clothes hot?
You wash your clothes, yeah, hot. You put it in and you use some kind of a chametz to go soap to it or whatever it is. So then you're allowed to... Who washes clothes hot?
Yeah.
So that's the bottle of challah shine with the thing. Right?
No.
If you have a bottle of challah...
You have a washing machine.
That's how you use that water, my friend.
No, the washing machine itself. You're talking about?
Okay, well, that's...
They used to wash it from...
Did you see the big bottle?
Yeah, but how do you think they would use really hot water?
Okay, so now that we finish with the Pesach part of it, there's two things that I want to talk about, and the one is like this. There's an implied thing over here. It says here we had kederu shel cheres. So we took a kederu made out of cheres. If you don't kasher it, you should leave it around. And how you should leave it around, you have to lock it up. Why does it say kederu of cheres? Because the Mishnah Berurah points out, because a normal kli you're going to kasher. They weren't as rich as we are, so your regular pots and pans, you kasher them and use them for Pesach. There's no shaila about using them to use those on that you wouldn't have them on Pesach. But cheres kelim you can't kasher, so mamela you have to say, well, what do I do with these kelim? So I think Rav says you have to get rid of them, you have to throw them out, but you have to break them before Pesach because they're going to be buying all. And Rav Shmuel, which says that no, you can keep them around, which is a din that you can keep them around. So this is the place. Or one of the few places that the Mechaber mentions it in, that or implies it in, that cheres can't be kasher. Okay, so I wanted to mention a few examples of that, of what where that comes up. In I know three places that are probably more three places in industrial equipment where cheres is possible. Cheres we're talking about here is the straight out cheres, the ceramic, like you'd find in a coffee mug. I know three places where it is. I'll give you a picture for this one. In this is a picture. If you could just not read the document, just look at the picture for that.
The picture's 1,000 words, you know. We're going to have to look on
the
other.
This clay Harris is talking about hot.
That was used for hot, yes. If you could look at the picture on the second page, okay? A homogenizer. If you have the sheet, because I don't have enough for you. Oh, you can keep it. A homogenizer. Look at the second page. A homogenizer has got this huge piece of equipment, okay? Mm-hmm. And the bulk of the homogenizer is just a pump. I'm sorry, is a motor to turn a bunch of pistons, and the pistons push, bang on the product, and by banging on it so much, it breaks into tiny particles, which does two things. It makes into tiny particles, helps it mix well, so it homogenizes it, but it also serves as a pump also. And in some companies, they'll use the homogenizer just as a pump. Even though it's there to theoretically be homogenizing, they'll use it just around. It's a great pump. It's a very strong pump because it bangs itself up and it pushes it very... The reason why it's so huge is because of the motor to bang those pistons. So there's usually 3-4 pistons that are in there hitting against the product. Those pistons have to be something that can handle the kind of product that you're that's being pushed through. So the derech klal in food applications, you're going to see just stainless steel. Okay, because that's what's fine for food applications. For things that are more corrosive, they can use ceramic. Ceramic is not
more corrosive.
If the product that's going through is that chemical, usually not for a food product, that their ceramic is very weak. I mean, you could break it with your hand with a light hammer banging on it, but it's strong against fine corrosion. So they most typically those pistons will be will be stainless steel, and usually it would only be ceramic in a case where it's a not food application, like a chemical kind of application. But there's no rules for these things, and it's easy enough. The cover, come out every case, you can lift it up and look in and see the pistons. So when you pass the homogenizer, you'd have to just look, lift it up, and the pistons are usually pretty obvious. You could see parts of the piston. You don't see the part where it actually hits the food, but the part where it says number 5 over here, you could usually see that part where the pistons pull back and forth.
If it's white, then it's ceramic.
Yeah, the white is usually ceramic. And the stainless steel looks like stainless steel. Okay? We found out this information. Shalom and I were sitting at this class, and everybody was falling asleep while the Fed drayed on and on and on and on about homogenizers. And then he said something like about, so we can make the pistons out of stainless steel or ceramic. It was like the whole room woke up. Like, everybody woke up. Everybody having, like, I was falling asleep. It was a very boring speech. But anyhow, the Baruch Hashem. Okay, that's one thing. Okay.
Everyone was from in the room?
Yes.
By the way, what do you call it? Usually homogenized are cold. So the question that
it's not necessarily true. Okay, two things. First of all, because depending on where in the line they put them, often in a hot place, and the homogenizer itself builds up heat in the product. Okay, in a flavor company that...
Well, finally, it doesn't have its own heat. Okay.
Right, but it builds up heat through friction.
I find that the newer homogenizer, they try to put in the ceramic.
Really? Try to put in the ceramic?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's at least what the... I found them a couple places, and then... someone that knows the industry says that, especially the stuff coming from Europe, the later ones, like, you know, Richard has recently put in something that had ceramic.
Okay, so it's something that's worth looking at. It takes a second to look at it, to lift up a little cover and look. Don't stick your hands in there, but just stick up a little cover and you can see it. It's usually easy enough to find it. In the flavor company that we were both at, they used the homogenizer in a cold place, but we had questions here that because if it's warm, the homogenizer adds heat to the thing. It just by the friction of it, adds heat to it. So we were never Mavara, but it would be worth being Mavara, that maybe it's enough to push it over being at this point. The company's pushing more. What? Then we'd have to dominate. What is it? That's for halacha. I don't remember which halacha. One of the late halacha.
What does it mean when you say it fights against corrosion?
Oh, the metal can get ruined by a corrosive liquid. But the ceramic can handle it. So they would use that in the right kind of application. They use the ceramic. But
actually,
it's stronger.
So ceramic can handle better
corrosion than metal cannot. That's correct.
And the corrosion is coming from the product.
From the product. Yeah, so if you have the right kind of product, the wrong kind of product going through, then you want to have
it. Against the metal, it's not a good choice.
Correct. Okay. The second place is there's something called a distillation column. In Mitzvah Shem, we're going to do distillations columns when we get to the end of, if we ever get to the end of Tuffman Bays. Okay, that's where it belongs, distillation columns, the end of Tuffman Bays. But in the distillation columns, particularly in the juice plants, they have something called packing, okay, which means whatever the point of it is, there's a liquid dripping through tiny little pieces that look something like this. Okay, it happens to be that the ones that I have here are all round. They don't always have this shape. Okay, the point is that the liquid drips through something that has many surfaces. Okay, so these are just different examples of how you get a lot of surfaces. So what they'll have is they'll have the column, which is a tall pillar, filled with 10,000 of these. Okay, and this all the chokmah goes into knowing which piece of packing to put into this thing. These, the ones they're using here, are metal and plastic, but they can also be made out of ceramic. And again, the ceramic thing will also be, depending on the kind of liquid you want to put through, will depend if you want to put metal or ceramic. Okay, so that's a second place where you could have... that I know of, that you could have ceramic.
Is this something that's a pasteurizer?
This is a distillation column for recovering essence from juices. That's where it's been found, is in the distillation column for essence. We're going to, that whole parasha, I don't know if you've ever seen it. We'll do it at the end of the talk.
These are for good girls.
They use a distillation column. I'm not familiar. I'm not sure. Okay. Maybe what you use the last thing, which is the third thing that I know of, is ceramic could also be used to filter things, and the reason why it filters it is exactly why it can't be kosher, because it's so porous. Okay, it's in the oil has held so much blea to it that you can't get the blea out of it. That's what the Gemara explains to Pasuk, and it has so the way they use a ceramic filter. This is from I only have one of each of these. This is from a juice filter. That's what this is from, this picture. In this case, if I remember correctly, the juice goes through the holes in the center, and it just you get pushed into the middle, and it just forces its way through the ceramic. The juice literally pushes, sucks out right through the ceramic, and any garbage that's left in the juice gets stuck behind. Only the liquid can pierce through the ceramic, and leaves all the solids behind it. It's a way of filtering juice. This is a this is a different kind of picture, just of how it works. Here's going from the outside in. The stuff goes in, and the stuff has different kinds of layers, that the junk stays on the outside, and only the end can go, only the liquid, the more liquid can go.
The standard household filter is from carbon. Is that Harris?
No, that's not Harris. Okay. That's halacha dal zayin or ches. No, it's just right out of the ground. But this is mamash real. The thing is pure, it's ceramic, and it wouldn't be one. What you do for juice, you'd have hundreds of these sitting together, and all the juice would be forced through these holes, either from the outside in or from the inside out, whichever way, and the ceramic acts as a filter to keep it in.
So that's the size of it.
This is the size of one. In this case, that's the size of one. Right, but there'd be 50 of them. And so the juice is being forced through all these things to make a... Okay. Now, another challenge we're talking about now is machlokes nachmanim, whether plastic should be treated as cheres. Okay, we know what cheres is, but whether the plastic should be or should not be. What's the shaila? I mean, obviously, plastic is not cheres. It's not cheres. So the Achron had two very opposite ways of looking at it. Some of them, starting with Henkin, said that the Torah says cheres can't be kashered, but everything else can be kashered. That's the only thing you can't. Isn't it cheres? And glass is a type of cheres. We'll get to that. But cheres can't be kashered. Everything else can be kashered. So unless we have some special reason to think that, we can kashered. And Ramosha and many on the other side held just the opposite. They said the Torah tells us what can be kashered. It tells us certain exceptions, but whatever it tells us you can kasher, you can kasher. If you come up with a new material, then we have no idea. So you can't kasher. So it's the exact opposite way of looking at that shot. And there's as you well know, there's a big machlokes in the placement as to which way to do it. In Eretz Yisrael, the Mekel, in the American Hashkochas, as a rule, are Mekel, except for one, are all Mekel. And just the oddity is that most American rabbis who advise their congregation, what they do, will say, like the merchant says, which would be
common.
What? So the most American rabbis will advise their people that you should not catch a plaza. So it's a funny situation that the hashkochas do catch a plaza. That's the way it's worked out. Okay, you can talk about that afterwards. Okay. Now, there's just an interesting child just worth mentioning.
Who is that one?
We'll talk about it afterwards. The Dayan Weiss is he says well, I'll tell you what, he says you should be Mekel. He says it's the Sofet, whether it's Cheres or not. Mm-hmm. So we always kasher and say the Binyama. So we should say Sofet Abaron Lukula. We should say Sofet Abaron Hok. That's one of his sources why should go to kasher.
Why don't we just say look at the material and see if it's poilet or not?
Okay. The answer, that's a good question. The answer to that question is really when we talk about glass, which is right. In glass that's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us have looked at the material and we think right. It's not, it doesn't have any glass, and the Ashkenazi Mili is the machmir, and we say no. We go to another place, but even so, we still choshesh that has blitz. So this it happens to be this. There's a bunch of answers. I'm not saying that you need to answer this question, but I'm just worth mentioning the possible answers. One is a shaila of niskalgo. It started off as a shaila of deraisa. The blitz that's in there was a deraisa, and it only now turned into abonu because it's in the binyama. And there's a shaila in which cases do you treat that as a suffix of abonu lahaku when it's a suffix deraisa. It started off as a suffix deraisa, and the blitz went in. The Primi Lazim says maybe you should have to be machmir. He's talking about a related question. He says you have to be machmir because maybe the person will use the kli with a double harf. Double harf is machayel and shach. It makes the ein binyamin into a binyamin. So you can't say it's ein binyamin, it's only drabon because it could turn into a deraisa. And the Tveke says there's a machlokes rishonim.
No,
Primi Lazim is not talking plastic. The Primi Lazim is talking about a case where it's a suffix. And you have a clear Zaini Binyam, but he says, why don't we say Sofet Abaron Hakol? That's what he's talking about. We'll get to his case in a second, that he's actually talking about. Rabbi Tveger says that there's Machlokes Rishonim, whether a Bliya that's Zaini Binyam, does that mean that right now it's not edible? Or does it mean that it's fine the way it is, but we know that it's in a condition that when it hits the next food, then it will be Lefkam to the next food? It's a Machlokes Rishonim. Right now, sitting, if you were to take a bite out of the Kli, would that Bliya be Lefshvach or Lefkam? Is it a ruined taste? Or is it only, will only be ruined when it gets out and into the next food, then it will ruin the next food? That's the Machlokes Rishonim. So he says maybe it should be totally on that. If you say that right now it's a good taste, but when it comes out, it will ruin the next food. So right now it's a Sofek Deraisa. The thing, you're dining on the thing that's in there, have I gotten out the issue that's in there? Okay, that's Rav Craig talks about that. Okay, what we're not going to talk about in Indian Cheres is a bunch of other materials. most of them are going to be in al-chachez, which is bone and wood and stone and rubber and bricks. That's in al-chachez. The mitzvah in China and porcelain enamel for al-chachez. That's where that been. That's really where it is.
What's the story that it's puzzle when it goes out?
The bliya gets degrades while sitting in the kli. So is it degrading to the point that it already doesn't taste good? Or no, but it became bad enough that if it hits into any other food, it's going to be lefkam. Where it is now, it might still be acceptable. It's going to have to do something else. It's going to got to come out of the kli and hit into the next food.
Like Dom Shapir, so once it appears, it changes the characteristic.
I don't know.
Is it totally non-food right now? Or it's not non-food, it's just not so good tasting, so it's going to be lefkam.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay,
that's fine. That's clear. Okay. And the last good. Okay. And the last material we're not going to talk about is glass, which is at the end of Tufton Alf. Okay. The other thing I want to talk about was the Mishmur says something here. It's like a side point, but it's an obvious point, which is the din here is you have a kli that was not kasher, so you have to put it away and you have to lock it up and whatever you have to do with the kli. So Mishmur says we're assuming that the kli was used. It came that was nishtamis ben chomus. He says, well, what happens if you go and you buy, if you have a new kli that was never used beforehand? Okay, so he brings, that's what he chooses to talk about, that the Lachman talk about, and we assume that if you buy a new kli, you go into the store, and you buy a new kli, you can assume that that new kli was never used. Because that's the normal thing, it wouldn't be used, and therefore you don't have to kasher the kli. You're allowed to use it as you have to tell you, but you don't have to kasher it. But the Mishmur says, if you buy a kli from a goy home, okay, you buy it on eBay, okay, you buy a kli, then you assume that the kli was used, or there's a potential that it was used, and therefore you have to kasher the kli aside from the tefillah came with yesterday. Okay, so I wanted to mention two situations that we have that are negated to us. The first one is, many years ago, about 20 years ago, Rodusky went to the farberware plant and spent some hours sitting in the farberware plant to see, because there were persistent rumors that they smeared the pots with lard when they shined the pots. So he went to the plant to spend. He spent a couple hours there, trying to understand what's going on. Like, is it really true? To see what was going on, and he found the following. And I have something to give you a write up of what he said, of what he found. The inside and the outside of the pot, I meant to bring one, but I forgot to. The inside and the outside of the pot are done differently. The inside of the pot is just buff, like a stainless steel. Like steel wool. Just scrub on the inside. There's no liquid or anything that's put into there. There is something very early in the process. There are oils put into there, but then it's burnt at over 1,000, if I remember, over 1,000 degrees. But later, when they're finished and the pot is already formed, that's not a problem. Those early bleeds are not a problem. But then they take the pot, they have to polish it. If the inside of the pot is polished, at that time,
what do you mean?
The pot with the food goes. The pot with the food goes. Like a steel wool, without anything on. Just a scraping, just to get up any chips. And that's not a problem. On the outside, they want to make it shinier. There, they put a thing that contains animal fat, obviously, which is treif. Well, the animal fat is treif. And they rub it on the outside. But he found, first of all, is that the animal fat is, I've got the percentage, you'll see inside, a small percentage of the actual mixture. The mixture itself that they put on, yes, it has animal fat in it, but it has all kinds of other chazra in it. And he said, he asked one of the people in the plant to taste it. He said, what does that stuff taste like? What is the finished liquid? So the guy tasted it, and it said it was putrid. And then Rodusky tasted it, once the guy tasted it, and he concurred with the guy that in fact the stuff was not royal. In addition, Rodusky, this is a classic Rodusky, he made a judgment as to how much fat they put onto the outside of the pot. And then he figured out how much of the cream is actually fat. And then he figured out, so how much blia could there be inside the pot? There's this much isser. And then if you use the pot, it's always, the blia that would come out of the side of the pot would always be buffed a zillion times the bria that any bria that could possibly be in there would be bustled into the food that you cook, even if you cook the tiniest amount of food in the pot.
And so the difference is outside or inside?
That's the last one. Yes, okay. That's the last one. But so the brias that are going to cost are always bustled, which is a rule of asur l'shtamesh b'shefa. A kli that if the bria is so small that it will always be bustled into what you're using it in, then some return home, they won't have to cash for it at all. In fact, the Mechaber calls it that. We usually are makmir for the taz and the shas that say it has to also be in the binyamin. It has to be also shas shefa and in the binyamin. But okay, of course it is in this case, because it was done in the factory however many weeks ago. And the last point was that this stuff is put on cold, but the buff, and it's put on the outside, but all this rubbing, all the buffing that you're doing to it, builds up heat. It goes to over 200 degrees. The pot gets very hot, so it does build up heat. But the second they stop doing the polishing, the second they finish, it cools down. So he thought that should be treated like a klisheni. It's a thing that the Tosfos says that klisheni is the characteristic of a klisheni is that the finest on the kairos, it's cooling down. Over here, he said, you see how much it's cooling down. That the second you take the machine off of it, it cools in a second. Not really retaining.
It's not polishing that heat that comes from friction is my layer.
No, it's not. It's assumed that it is. But it's a question whether it's because of a cremation or not. But if it's hot, you just assume that there's a bleed. But if he wants to say that this has a bleed, but it's being treated like a cliche in you, like ivory, which would only be kine klipa. His point is here, and since it's only kine klipa, except for the outside, it won't work to the inside. Okay, that's one thing. The second thing is something we know more about, which is the pre-season cast iron pots, which I brought one here. I haven't yet finished with it, so Mishum will continue with it next week, which is like this. When you make pots out of cast iron, when you make a pot out of cast iron, first of all, it will rust if you don't do something to it. And second, in addition to that, it could rust. It will, if you wanted to, the real characteristics of a pot, one of the characteristics of a cast iron pot is that it's non-stick, and it's non-stick because of the oils that are absorbed into it. So if you don't do what they call season it, if you don't season it, it won't have that property of being nonstick. So you have to season a pot. So you could buy a pot that's not seasoned, and they put like a wax coating on it. The wax coating is not edible. It's not a problem. And then you melt that off and then season it yourself. But most people are lazy and would rather just buy that the company season it.
You just season your own cast iron and sell it?
Yes. No. I'll tell you how you season in a second, but you could buy a pot that has no seasoning. It comes gray. You could buy it by itself raw, but it's coated with a wax just to keep it from rusting, and then you melt that wax off, and then you can season it yourself. How do you season the pot? You spray or pour a thin layer of oil or fat or butter or something like that onto the pan, and then you stick it into a warm oven for a couple of hours, like 300-400 degrees for a couple of hours. That's to get it started. That's like the beginning of the seasoning. Then you do that many, many times, and over time it builds up a nice, good amount of bleed into the pot, and it gets this flat, nice flat color that's considered really seasoned, and then your pot is seasoned for good. Okay? Now, once you season your pot, you're not allowed to wash it. Okay, I'm not saying that right. You're not allowed to wash it with soap. Okay, if you wash it with soap, you're going to get the seasoning out of it, and you have to season it again. So you just rinse it with water, or you use like a scrubber just to get the end off of it, but you're not that's how much they're counting on the bleed being in there, that you're not allowed to wash this thing with soap. Okay, so we always talk about Hagol's Kalim, and we talk about theoretical players that no one has ever heard of or ever seen. Like we just do it like there's a custom, but in a cast iron pot, supposedly, we'll find out more later, but supposedly, the bleed is right there. And if you wash this with soap, you're going to get something out of there, and it's not going to work the way it was supposed to be. And it's like, mamash, like, real bleed, like it's supposed to be. So
commercial? Or people
using no, this is a house. This is for a house. I bought when I want. This is a home that I bought some Target. Yeah, this is for regular people. I bought it instead of a frying pan. I thought my wife, when I'm finished with this whole project, would have more use from this than from a frying pan. Okay, that's why I bought it. But it's a frying pan. You can buy it as a frying pan or as a whole pot.
This is a frying pan.
This is not a frying pan. This is it's heavy. It goes over two burners. That's what it's supposed to be.
Uh-huh.
It's like a big open frying pan. Okay,
so now, I mean, your stove is small enough.
So now the first question was, I said to Rabbi Schwartz, tell me, because if you feel it, you don't feel any bad. I assume you were going to feel it. Now, what the company does, they do it for you. This is preseason. I mean, they're spraying a spray onto it. The boxes that they use special oil, but they spray something onto it, and you would expect that you'd feel something, which you don't. Okay?
You can feel it if you want. You don't feel anything on here. So I said, I'll take a paper towel, maybe I'll go back and forth a few times.
They're on the wrong side. I saw the
both sides. It's two sides. You can use it on both sides. You can use it on both sides, but it's the same thing. What?
That's for broiling.
Right, correct. It's two sides. So first, I said to Rabbi Schwartz, what do you think? Do you think that am I mechuyev to wash it with soap? I mean, when you cash it clean, you have to get rid of the end first. So I know that there's the end that I can get out of here. If I wash this with soap, it goes in the direction, don't dare wash this thing with soap. So if I wash this, scrub it with soap, or stick it in the dishwasher, it's going to I'm going to get out the end.
That's because soap or water?
Yeah, no, soap. Okay, soap, that's what it says. It doesn't talk about
soap and oil, mixes with oil, right?
The soap.
There's a lot of time, thank God.
No, that's correct. So I said, should I be included to wash this thing with soap to get the band, as if to get the band out? Service sources. He says, no. He says, if you feel a oily, covering on it, that you have to get rid of it. Otherwise, that's a din of hakol. That takes out bleas. It's like as if we're being smarter. We're saying, now we finally banged into a real blea, and now we're gonna come to how to get rid of it. And we finally...
Yeah, soap is going to take condom because it's taking
it. Soap is the one that takes out bed. So, we would assume. That was my question. I said, if the soap can take it out, should we treat
it? Definitely, because you soap
and bed, so
I'm telling you,
it's bad. Right, but I said, Smart's touched it as you can. So you don't feel anything on here. You don't feel any bed on the.
And because when it's so, how do you feel bed? Because there's a level. It's on level. If they know how to do it very, very well level, they're not going to feel the
bend. Another property of cast iron pots is that they are not smooth. They have lots of bumps in them, because that has to do with the way the food is. You'll see yourself that it's not at all a smooth surface. Right. I mean, in certain spots, there's a certain, here's a bad spot that's just smooth. But really, it's not smooth. So okay, you can try it, and we'll try your thing. We'll try to run tissue over it.
So
he said, so that's not, even though you could get it out, that's a bleed. When you could get out, even they're telling you to get out with soap, but we know the din of how to get the blea out. You put it into boiling water, it's going to get it out. Okay, that part I have not told you. That's mission for next week, is to try to stick it into boiling water and see what happens. We should be getting something should be coming out of this thing. But we should expect to see oil coming out.
So he's touching it up as a blea, not as a band.
Right, which is, what is a band mean? Something that you would notice on the outside, and a blea is something that's absorbed inside of it. It's cooked at 3-4 degrees.
This is a unique thing. You can't take the regular bleed because they purposely, like you're saying, they purposely do something to it that it doesn't go all the way in.
Oh, no, it does. Because they say when you use the pot, before you use it in a regular pot, you can put your food into it. You have to heat it up first, the way I read was. And you'll see the oil like coming to the surface, like it'll come out, like it'll be like, waiting there, and then you put your food in. Now that's nice and hot, and you see the oil, it's there waiting to come out, not that it's on the outside. You're saying it's like, as if it's sprayed, like hiding, you know what I mean?
No, they say you'll actually see the oil when you heat this thing up.
That's one of the places that, yes, it'll start to get that kind of, so we're going to try it.
So the more you use it, the more you lose?
No, because every time you cook with it, you're re-seasoning it. You're putting more in, you're taking in, you're giving back. See, when you put something else in, you put a piece of fish onto this,
there's a fish. They fill up with wine, so
there's no water. It's not okay, now, Rabbi first had a big chiddush about this kind of a pot. Emergency, the next thing I'm going to clarify with him what he said before I take over what he said. it was a big chiddush, okay? And now, the one last child is because I'm going to try to kasher this week. Emergency, I'm going to try to kasher this week. Is how you supposed to kasher it? How would you kasher it? Let's say it had a trick for you. So it's worth noting this. The shach brings in tough. Kuf Chaf Al, which is the other sin about Hagol's Kalim, he brings another shita that we're not used to. Okay, it's just worth knowing this machlokes. The din is that if you cook a piece of meat, if the tarfus is a solid piece and it goes on to the clay, you have to do liban. You can't do Hagol, you have to do liban. I suppose if you did a liquid on here, you would do Hagol. What's the criteria that we're looking for? So the din is that the criteria is whether it's a liquid or a solid. If it's a solid, like a piece of meat, then you do libun. If it's a liquid, then you do hagol. But if you cooked up a pot of a soup, then you do hagol. The shach brings a ramami panu who says, or oil. It's a liquid. The ramami panu says, it doesn't depend whether it's a liquid or a solid. It depends whether the iser has direct contact with the kli, or the iser has indirect contact with the kli.
So usually that's liquid mitzal. If you put a piece of meat, then the isra has direct contact. But if you make a soup, then the meat is just floating around in the soup. But what's having the direct contact is the water. That's how the Rambam Pana learns the difference between a solid and a liquid. Okay? Which, and the Naftamina is, what happens if the liquid itself is the isra? What happens if you put a tray, you cook something up in a tray from oil? You go to McDonald's and the oil itself is what's treif, not the french fries, the oil is treif. Or in our case, the thing that they sprayed onto this was a liquid, but that was the isser. There wasn't any other isser. The isser itself was a liquid. So according to the Rami Panit, then a kli like this would be liquid. Okay, but that's not the din. That's not what the Rami Panit. The din is that it depends if it's a liquid or if it's a liquid or a solid. What went on to here was a liquid. That's what you put onto this. You spray on something onto it. And therefore, the kli, the way to kosher it, even though there was nothing else, that was all that was put onto the kli, the way you kosher it is to give it hagol. That's what it needs. That's the kind of kosher that it needs is hagol. Even though it was put into the fire, this was put into a hot oven. They did it. They put this into a hot oven.
I'll point the CRC, put something else in there. The CRC probably needs to leave and go.
Okay. So that's of course, Ramam and Pana. So the CRC was it's a mistake. Yes, that's a mistake. Because it's not, even though the isser is in the, even the isser was in direct contact, but the isser was in a liquid form. And that's a muscle you had on the table, but that, I do not believe that's correct. And yes, in Mirtz Hashem, Mirtz Hashem will try to finish the halacha next week, but I will try to, first we'll talk to Rabbi first, to hear what he had, his chiddush, which we've heard rumors of what he said. And I want to ask him a question about the Be'en also, whether he thinks that you have to get rid of the Be'en first, and I will try to kasher also and see what happens. Okay? Thank you.